Yeah, you know, it was it just solved the problem in the moment, and I had fun making it, and it's apparently been useful. So, you know, if anyone else wants to use that to study for score study things, go for it. It's free.
There you go. So let's talk about your work now, considering this is a show about student composers and not just conductors, teachers, which just happens to be you have all of that at the same time. You are a winner of the Parma Student Composer Prize. You've got your work Awakening on Nirvana Records. I don't know if they pronounce it Nirvana, Navona, I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think it's Navona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking to another composer. I think he might have pronounced it Nirvana, but I don't remember.
It's also been a while since I've heard anyone say it out loud, so...
Yeah. Again, anyone's good. I'm a singer. I take pronunciations pretty seriously, so...
Yeah.
So your works, we could start with that one, or something that you've got going on. I remember you saying before we started that there's something pretty significant coming up in the near future.
Yeah, so I was really fortunate enough to have just won my school's Walsom competition, which is kind of like the big ensemble competition that they hold mostly annually, maybe biannually. It's basically, I wrote a piece for wind ensemble, and so that's coming down the pipe in I think December 7th, I want to say, is the date. And I'm really looking forward to that. That you know, it's like getting a big ensemble piece performed is always this kind of like
big deal,
challenging task. Yeah, and so like that's the fact that that's coming is just, you know, really, really exciting, I think. So I'm looking forward for all of that.
What's the piece?
So the piece is called Dark Nebula, and it's it's for what they call wind orchestra. It's kind of, you know, like if you excerpt it, like the wind section out of an orchestra, and then kind of bolstered it up through, you know, a few more clarinets here and there to fill out, you know, like alto and E flat and all that kind of stuff. And
so where the strings would be, just add more winds to make it a wind orchestra instead wind
just
ensemble.
Kind of like a slightly like, you know, beefy wind thing there. At least that's kind of how I thought of it, because you know, from my conducting experience with specifically orchestra, I was really comfortable writing for orchestra. And so as I was thinking about this piece, I was just thinking, thinking about it like the wind section from an orchestra, and you'll be fine kind of thing.
Now, I remember when I was in undergrad, they had a wind symphony there. So that I would imagine that would be similar.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. So just, you know, kind of approaching it from that angle. And that piece kind of takes this new angle I've been kind of developing in terms of developing harmony. It turned out, I thought, really well, and I was thrilled to see when it won the award. And so just kind of seeing that whole thing kind of come to fruition is really exciting.
What's the new harmonic angle you were taking?
Oh man. All right. So that is a loaded question.
Okay.
all right. So, you know, so I mentioned that I'm kind of like one of my hobbies is programming. Uh-huh. I had been studying Magnus Lindberg, who he's a Finnish composer, for a while. Before that, I was doing some papers on him. And if anybody doesn't know, he kind of came up with this whole system for ordering his harmonies. And I thought, oh, you know, that'd be interesting if I could come up with, you know, some sort of, not really system, but a way of kind of determining that. And I basically wrote this program that's not totally out for public consumption yet. I've been, you know, passing it around in like a beta version between my friends, but,
we're not going to link to this one in the post.
Yeah. but you know, it will be up on my website at some point. So, you know, you should check back, but, it's, kind of the idea behind it is, if you imagine, you know, like that day when you came to music theory class and you were learning about triads for the first time, and they said, okay, you know, like a major triad is a major third and then a minor third. And minor is minor and then major. And then you got major, major for augmented, minor, minor for diminished kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that because I was actually having to teach that pretty soon. And then I was like, okay, you know, there's something really interesting about that, that that's actually a binary relationship. Whereas every adjacent interval can either be a major third or a minor third. Mm-hmm. And that works totally true for, you know, tertian harmony, if we're not taking into account like inversions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I basically thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if we could, create structures like that, but that weren't based on major and minor thirds? Like, what if you instead decided to say, okay, like everything's going to be either adjacently a perfect fifth and like a minor seventh or something. Uh-huh. And then you get these like really interesting kind of chord structures out of that, and you can extend them crazy amounts. And kind of ways to think about harmony like that. And then in writing that program, I wrote like a bunch of filters for it so that I could be, or that you can kind of designate these filters of what pitches that you want in it, what pitches you don't, what, you know, like you can filter by interval vectors and all those things that people know, like set theory or anything like that. So in doing all of that, basically what I created was this program that I could ask of it to produce for me certain harmonies that met certain criteria. So if I was writing something, I was like, you know, like this harmony is really cool that I have here, but it's just not quite right. But I know that it has these characteristics in it. And then I could plug in certain things into this program and then have it spit out a bunch more other options for this kind of thing. Whereas, you know, it might've taken me a lot longer to kind of like figure that out by hand. So like that methodology played into this new piece that I wrote. And I was really excited to see that, you know, it wasn't a bunch of bogus, that it actually kind of worked. Because, you know,
some music came out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the thing that, you know, my teacher, if he ever hears this, is going to, I feel like he was really nervous the first time I brought it up to him, because he felt like it was going to be like, you know, that serialism thing where all of a sudden now you have a bunch of these rules to follow. And now like,
right,
you're very kind of, you can't do things. But I just saw it as a way of like, you know, asking something that could do a bunch of computations much faster than I could, like, you know, what are the possibilities here? What am I not thinking of right now that could be cool? And then in doing that, I found myself really branching out on some certain harmonic things. And then it actually created the entire structure for the piece. And so, yeah, if you're around the Maryland College Park area on December 7th, you should come check out that concert. I'm going to post that on this post.
If December 7th, what day of the week is that?
Oh, I think it's a Friday. It's on my website. Wait, here.
It might be a Thursday.
My events page here.
If it's a Thursday, I can't go because I have church rehearsal. But
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, let's see. World premiere. It's Friday, December 7th at 8 p.m. at in Deckelbaum Hall at the Clarice Smith Performing Arts Center. For anyone who wants to come,
I'd be
happy to see you there.
It sounds like a really interesting concept. It doesn't sound restrictive to me. It actually sounds like, I mean, to give the devil's advocate response, it almost sounds like it almost sounds like cheating. Like, it's like, okay, you have this idea, you have this certain set of intervals you want to work with, and then you plug it in and all of a sudden you have all of the possibilities you have to build off of that interval. And that sounds incredibly cool, actually.
Yeah, and I found myself at some points becoming like overwhelmed with how much there was, and then I really had to just kind of like, you know, retreat to like more kind of compositional thinking. But in other spots, it was really helpful in giving me kind of, I was telling some of my friends and my teacher that I felt like I was really getting into habits of composing, and I didn't like that, that I wanted to really focus on my like instincts as a composer and not so much my habits. And this really helped me get out of habits, because it basically said, you know, like what I would come up with in this moment is probably this, but now what I can come up with in this moment is all of these different things, because I have this tool at my disposal where I can ask it, you know, what else exists.
You're gonna have a capitalist coming to ask you to sell this idea to them for a lot of money.
Maybe, but you know, contemporary composition doesn't always yield that much money. So,
well, yes,
we'll have to see how much they're really willing to pay.
Yeah, this is true. So this piece will be your first one that will have been performed, or have you had pieces performed using this sort of system that you've done before, or will this be the first one?
We have this 72-hour competition, actually part of Tempo.
I remember actually seeing stuff about that when I was looking up information on Tempo, the 72-hour thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, lots of schools have something like this where, you know, composers will get some amount of time to compose a piece. For us, it's 36 hours, and then performers will get another 36 to basically rehearse it. And I had just the summer before come up with this program and this idea. So I used it for that. And it, you know, it was okay, but I, at that point, really didn't know how to use it that well. I didn't know how to actually take advantage of everything. I feel like at that point, it probably was a little bit restricting. This won't be the first piece, but I think this will be the first piece where it actually works and works well in it. So, yeah.
So in the previous one, it didn't quite work so well, the 72-hour thing?
In the previous one, again, you know, I had 36 hours to write the piece, so maybe that was a factor in it too.
Yeah.
But I felt like a lot of things, you know, I plugged in one sort of harmony and I was basing everything off of this kind of thing. And then a lot of things kind of started sounding similar. And I didn't yet really know how to use it in terms of like being able to have it create breadth and not just kind of focused attention on something. And so that's something that I've experimented more with and have found it very useful in doing.
So what did you plug in to get sort of a basis for your piece that's going to be played by the wind orchestra?
Yeah, so it was, well, one thing I didn't plug in, like the first thing I just thought, for whatever reason, had this idea that I wanted the main kind of head motive to be just like a series of like fifths, like or essentially like just a very quintal kind of sound. Mm-hmm. And I had this whole theme in my mind, but really important to me, as we'll kind of get into, I'm sure, with some of my other music, is that there's always this drama within my music, at least in the way that I think about it. And there's always this thing that's antagonistic against whatever the thing is that is kind of holding the foreground at the moment.
Right.
And so what I wanted to do was find some other harmony that could act as that kind of antagonist in this drama that was unfolding. And I forget exactly kind of what interval set I used for it, but what came out was like, you know, this thing that had no perfect fits in it. So it was this complete opposite, but it had this other quality where it was completely symmetrical, so that, you know, played forward or backwards, it was the same intervals. Mm-hmm. And so it actually kind of shared these qualities with this quintal material that I had before, but it also had, you know, these unique qualities of being the exact opposite of it. Uh-huh. And so Dark Nebula, like the title, is kind of comes from that, where a dark nebula is like, essentially like a space cloud, I guess. You know, I'm not an astrophysicist or anything, so right. Don't take my word on any of this, but it's this thing that like obscures light. It's so dense that it obscures the light passing through it. Uh-huh. And that was the entire idea behind it, that this harmony that I plugged in the background became this other character entirely. And then so kind of throughout the piece, then that I knew that I was using that harmony, there were tons of ways that I could kind of play with that throughout.
Different ways to obscure that harmony that you had first put forward.
Yeah, exactly. And then kind of the ending, you know, not giving anything away here, because right. This could happen in so many ways. But basically, my goal was to take these two things that were so totally opposite to each other and then bring them together in the end and create something new with that. Mm-hmm. And it also kind of helped me do that, because I was able to say, okay, well, now, you know, at the end, I want something that has these qualities that I plugged in before, but also now I want like these notes that I have from my quintal set, like what exists that has that. And then, you know, I plug that in, and literally within seconds, I like what spit out is like, you know, depending on how many filters I have on it, you know, something like maybe a dozen, or, you know, even like 50 just different options that I have. And then I can play around with all of them.
Uh-huh. That sounds really cool. And so December 7th at the Clarice Smith Performing Arts Center.
Yeah, absolutely. You should come.
I'm pretty sure that UMD underwrites on WBJC. So we might be talking about something, maybe not that particular concert, probably not actually, but I mean, there are concerts at UMD that we talk about on the air here, so people might hear about it on actually the station and not just online, which there will be information about. So,
well, the concerts that are produced there by these large ensembles are always really top notch. So
yeah,
even if you're not coming for that piece, you'll be sure to enjoy yourself, I'm sure.
Of course. So you mentioned this idea of drama between different characters in your works, and let's look at something that I can play from your website and we can listen to. Which piece do you want to talk about when it comes to this?
You know, so I think the string quartet number one was a piece that I really kind of was very cognizant of the drama that was happening at the time. And so yeah, we could probably go for that.
All right. And the string quartet number one, do the performers on here, they're not on the site, so, but if we could
they were just kind of, it wasn't a set string quartet. I kind of had to get a group of my friends together.
Of course.
It's actually been performed a few times now. I'm not sure which one this is. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then we'll go ahead and listen to that. This is the string quartet number one by Quinn Dizon.
Thank you.
So the beginning of some conflict is what I'm starting to hear here. So we're giving the sort of main theme from the beginning, I could hear, to the lower instruments, it sounds.
Yeah, that kind of comes back, I guess, a little bit later. I actually has this thing that kind of is the emotional release of the piece, really.
And people will hear this better when they just listen to the recording and not both of us at the same time.
Yeah, probably.
So you have continued rising action here, I can feel.
Yeah, and there's it's just this kind of like big push towards conflict, really, is what's happening. Uh-huh. Like, at least that's how kind of I saw it, and we can talk about how the electronics kind of worked in there too, which they're pretty subtle, but
yeah, I was gonna say, yeah. I don't hear anything overt in the electronics.
Yeah, in the recording it doesn't come out as much. It was really, I think, a good bit better in the actual hall. Mm-hmm. Mostly because it just sounds like the reverb, I guess, like the natural reverb a little bit. But right. There was some pretty heavy reverb on the quartet in the hall. And then I wrote this kind of patch with Max MSP for live processing that what it was essentially doing was every time the quartet reached beyond the certain kind of threshold of volume, the way that I viewed it was that the environment in which they were playing would kind of start to fight back against them.
Right.
There's actually kind of, as part of the sound that is really just getting mixed into it in this recording, but in the actual performance, you would hear them get really loud, and then you would hear from kind of like different spatial areas, kind of like this reverb and then kind of a distortion hitting back at them.
So the electronics were used to sort of, they were taken from what the players were playing at the time.
Yeah. So everything in electronics was rendered live, essentially live processed. Mm-hmm. And it actually formed, I think, in this piece I talked about in my other piece, kind of like a main antagonist. But in this piece, kind of the electronics, that element is the antagonist.
Right.
And and the electronics are specifically the environment in which the quartet is playing. Mm-hmm. And so the kind of more that the quartet fights to kind of break out of this environment, the more it fights to keep them in and kind of suppress them. And so it's through this ending, actually, that we're just getting into right now, where they've, you know, they really made the last final kind of push for it, and it was unsuccessful because, you know, no matter what they got to, it was always just going to kind of keep them down. Mm-hmm.